This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. As the baby boomers age, the American population as a whole ages, and the question of livability becomes a pressing concern. How do older adults maintain healthy, productive lives? And how do their communities matter to their quality of life? These are questions that radiate out into the spheres of urban planning, development policy, and public policy. Kendra Heatwell Shank is a PhD candidate in occupational science at UNC Chapel Hill, and she's designed a study to look for practical, on-the-ground solutions to the livability issues facing older Americans. Kendra, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your project.
Well, as you said, it really is looking at on-the-ground, day-to-day life of older adults. So livability is a concept that really has started to gain traction, but is not very well defined. And what often is implied by livability is public policy kinds of things. People make assumptions about housing and transportation, healthcare, safety, that kind of thing. But a lot of it really is coming from the policy sphere. It really isn't based on day-to-day lives. So I designed this study that takes a couple different angles to look at how people go about their day-to-day lives, what they do, and how those can help inform the concept of livability.
And some of it has to do with people wanting to stay in their homes a little longer and not going into other forms of living arrangements. So what are some of the problems or challenges people face in staying in their homes as they age?
Mm-hmm. Or aging in place, we sometimes call it. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole range of things. People, we often think of the physical limitations that people face, changes in vision or physical ability, stamina. But there's also more complex issues, social things, people that they have had relationships with, either friends dying or people move, and so they need to renegotiate how they participate in their communities.
Because a lot of ways, you know, what we hear, especially as people age, and the question comes up of whether we go into continuing care or some other facility. Well, I don't want to lose my independence. The fact is, everybody has become dependent on a network of friends and maybe close relatives who have been living nearby. Mm-hmm. And as that changes, you become actually fatefully independent, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it also depends on the community that you live in. So the social aspects as well as the physical aspects. Do you live in a place where you need to drive everywhere you go? Are there places that you can walk? Do you live on a main street that maybe you don't want to drive out on, you know, heavy traffic times of day? All that plays into how people are able to do the things they want to do and need to do in order to age in place. And for older adults, research has shown that being able to do those things really directly impacts their quality of life and their health outcomes. So it's an important thing to look at.
So how does your study work? What are you doing?
There are a couple different approaches, like I said. One is interviews. I do a sequence of interviews just asking people about their experiences and their activities. I also do an observation of an activity that they choose. And we do a couple, usually about 2 weeks, of GPS data collection of their activities.
So you're hooking a GPS tracker on folks?
It sounds
a little ominous. We could, you know what? Drones are now legal. The police can have drones. You can follow them with those.
No, this is much less intimidating than that.
Okay.
I have a GPS unit that is, it's not like the ones with the screens common in vehicles. It's a little 1 by 1.5 by 1.5 box, about an ounce, that people can slip into a pocket or into a purse and then carry for 10 to 14 days. And what that tells us, or what that gives us at the end of that time, is a map of exactly where they were in location and destination and time.
This is a little like the family circus, you know, when you send Jeffy off to bring his shoes back in.
Little dotted lines
yeah.
behind them, yeah.
Is that what you're getting?
Yeah, so we get a map. The software talks to Google Earth. So when we look at it together at the end of that time, we have a map that shows trails, essentially. And we can say, tell me about when you went to this location, or why did you go here? Why do you only leave your house in the afternoon? That kind of question.
And what are you finding? Like that, for instance, if you find that somebody is only leaving the afternoon and then you ask them that question in the first place, are they surprised to hear that you've found a pattern that they didn't really see as a pattern?
People love to look at their maps. They really enjoy seeing it. I think so far, it's really the first level of analysis is to sit down with people and look at their maps and ask those types of questions. So some of it is surprise, but also some of it is just talking about things that we wouldn't otherwise have been able to discuss. So I could ask someone about their patterns or their activities, but they would probably just give me a list. So this analysis, one thing that I'm finding is that often people do one outing at a time instead of doing a whole string of things altogether. And that often is something that they don't realize that they do, but then can reflect back and say, oh, that's because of my energy level. You know, I really am not up to doing more than one thing at a time. And so I have to space it out over the course of a week.
You found out some interesting things, too, in terms of why people go to, you know, various pharmacies or where they're doing their shopping, even if they might bypass something that's even closer to them after they move.
Yeah, so that's a great – I can give you an example that helps show the difference between livability and accessibility. So often with aging in place, people think about accessible buildings or communities, places that you physically can get into and navigate. I have a participant who recently moved to a community where there's a great new pharmacy, accessible building, lots of people go there. But it showed up on her map when we looked at it together that she had never used that spot. And so I asked her why. And after thinking a little bit, she said, well, when I pull out of my neighborhood, I have to make a left turn. And in the afternoons, it's really heavy traffic. I don't like doing it, quite frankly. So instead, she drives to a pharmacy that's near an older house that she used to live in. It's about twice as far. But she said, I know how to get there. I know how to park. I don't have to make left-hand turns. And also, which I think is significant, there's a social element too. She recognizes the cashier. She knows the pharmacist. It's not an automated system. And so she has the sense that it's a place she belongs. She has this attachment and the sense that she's going to be taken care of there. So really, it highlights the idea that livability is about the relationship between the features of a community or the physical features and also what people need. That relationship is what hasn't really been looked at in current policy efforts.
So what would you do with the data, even information like that? How would that help planners come up with better designs?
Well, so looking at it in more cases is going to be helpful. Looking, since I'm based solely in Durham, I'll use all these maps to sort of layer on top of each other and look at areas where activity is dense, where things happen, compared to places where people don't go. Why are there no trails in this area, for example? And by looking at that comparison, looking at other patterns that may appear as more participants' maps stack up, will help inform suggestions. So every place is going to be different. I mean, that's part of the complexity of this. Every community is different. People's needs are different. And over time, what the baby boomers need will be different in a decade, I think, than it is right now. So it really is an evolving process. But looking at how the physical community intersects with service provision, intersects with city planning, as you mentioned, all those things, I think, can begin to be based on real-life experiences versus on this assumption of what people may need.
Is it a tough sell for you? I mean, how do the people in your study take this when you first propose the idea?
Of carrying the GPS?
Yeah, that in particular. And just sitting around talking about their daily habits.
Well, I think there's some question about whether or not it's worth it. I mean, you really want to know just about my mundane, everyday things? I'm just going to the post office. Why do you want to tag along for that? But I have a background in occupational therapy and am now studying occupational science. So I come in with this strong belief that the things that people do, the activities of daily life, or what we would call occupations, really add up to shape your life and to influence your well-being and quality of life. So sometimes I go at the angle of, well, imagine if you couldn't do this. How would that impact you? people in general, I would say, are very excited about carrying the GPS once I show them what the map will look like. It's fascinating to see what your trails are like over the course of 2 weeks.
And you're having fun doing it?
I really enjoy it. One of the aspects I enjoy the most is the observation piece. So people choose an activity, and it usually, I would say, reflects their values, something that's significant in their life for us to do together. And so I get to tag along and do what they choose for us to spend time on.
Sounds great. And you're going to finish up this year?
Yes, I'm actually still recruiting participants, but we'll be doing data collection through the end of the summer and finishing up this coming year.
Good luck with the project. Kendra, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Kendra Heatwell-Shank is a PhD candidate at UNC. She is in the School of Occupational Health, and she is going to continue her research. If you're interested in being part of it, you can contact us at sot@wunc.org. Just ahead, we'll journey to colonial Africa with writer Alexandra Fuller on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.